Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Thanks a lot for listening today. We'll get to excerpts and reactions to the Republican debate last night. We'll see what Herman Cain's 9 + 9 + 9 adds up to in some of the other candidates' eyes. We'll talk to a leader of the Occupy Wall Street movement today, and he will be here primarily to take your calls. So we're not going to be looking for people to embrace it or denounce it, but a lot of you who are kind of just figuring out how you feel about Occupy Wall Street to call up and ask this guest questions. And we'll have an executive from Yelp today on how you use that. But before we get to any of it, I want to introduce an experiment for today's show for those of you who can use Twitter. And that actually can be any of you, even without a Twitter account. For the next hour and a half, we want you to be a Twitter hashtag scout. Then call in near the end of the show and tell us what you found that was interesting. The object of the game is to find something interesting going on somewhere in the Twitter sphere, then call in and give us a brief report at around 11:40 this morning. Again, the trick is to find an interesting hashtag. Then you can just track it for the next hour and a half. What kind of story does it tell? Who is it talking about? How is the conversation on Twitter changing over the course of this morning around this particular hashtag? What did you learn? What were some interesting individual tweets that you might want to read? Did everyone involved in the thread agree with each other, or was there a lively debate? Was there humor? You can definitely pass along the humor. Were there good links to things? You be the Twitter hashtag scout. Find a hashtag worth following and follow it. And if you want, tweet me at Brian Lehrer and tell me what hashtag you're watching. We will retweet it so that other Brian Lehrer Show listeners can get in on the conversation. For example, I started looking for a hashtag to watch this morning just by looking at Twitter's own trending topics list. But that turned out to feature Rhiannon and Chris Brown at the top, yawn, followed by a thread called Horror Sitcoms, which was cute in a gross sort of way. People making up horror sitcom names like How I Ate Your Mother. Cute, but not really us, I don't think. Then there was a hashtag about some BlackBerry data services being down this morning. That one had a lot of schadenfreude about BlackBerry owners having to resort to good old texting today and things like that. But I didn't find any one of those threads so interesting. So I searched the hashtags for some obvious news stories today. John Liu, OWS, NBA, Christie, John Paulson, Gilad Shalit, just to see how people are commenting on all of these things. Maggie Haberman from Politico tweets, this John Liu story is a big deal. Someone called JNOC164 tweets he is glad Shalit is free, but giving up 1,027 Palestinian prisoners for one dude, he writes, it's not right. Those are just a couple of examples. Maybe you want to do that with a news story or any topic of your choice. It can be horror sitcoms. I don't care. But pick any hashtag, follow it on Twitter until about 11:40 this morning, so about an hour and a half, then call in and tell us what you learned. And when you find your hashtag, tweet it at Brian Lehrer, and we will retweet it out to hopefully spark some more interest. So you do this. We'll take your calls on the air, as I say, around 11:40 Eastern time this morning. Start looking now for what's out there anywhere in the Twitter sphere. Then get ready to call in later and tell us about the item you tracked and what was cool, what was interesting, what people in our audience can learn from it. A little social media experiment on the Brian Lehrer Show today. Meanwhile, did you catch the Republican debate last night? Charlie Rose was moderating, and for the first time this debate season, the podiums were gone. Instead, the candidates sat around a big wooden table across from Rose and the other moderators. Maybe it's in Charlie's contract, you know, I only do interviews at a table so that I can lean on my elbow and point my right finger at the person I'm talking to. And the table kind of worked. Last night's debate was a relatively civil and concrete affair, focused entirely on the economy and what the candidates would do to fix it. Over the last few weeks, there's been a rotating cast of candidates who share front-runner status with Mitt Romney, or kind of competing to be the not Romney. First Minnesota Representative Michelle Bachmann. Remember when she was hot? Does that seem like a long time ago now? Then Texas Governor Rick Perry. And last night, it was businessman Herman Cain. And there throughout it all was Romney, the former Massachusetts governor, in a way that kind of felt like a last chance for the others to make a dent. And yeah, here it is, mid-October. So for his part, Romney continued to act the part of front runner with eye on the general election, as we will hear in the clips, even making a surprisingly moderate defense of the TARP bailouts and of his health care plan in Massachusetts, similar to Obamacare. Anna Sale, reporter for itsafreecountry.org, was at the Dartmouth debate last night, and she is stuck in New Hampshire. I mean stuck. Her car broke down by the side of the road. Anna, what, 4 miles from New Hampshire Public Radio? Where you're supposed
4 to... 4 miles from New Hampshire Public Radio, but it's beautiful scenery here on the side of the road, so
Intrepid, unflappable Anna Sale joining us from her cell phone instead of the comforts of New Hampshire Public Radio. Let's start with a clip of Romney when he was asked whether he would be able to reach across the aisle in an increasingly partisan and divided Washington. Here is about a minute of his response, including a Charlie Rose follow-up.
The real course for America is to have someone who's a leader who can identify people in both parties who care more about the country than they care about getting reelected. There are Democrats like that. There are Republicans like that. I was the governor of a state that had a few Democrats. People in this room know how many we had in Massachusetts.
So it's essential to deal with Democrats and be prepared to compromise on the big issues of our time?
You have to stand by your principles. At the same time, you know that good Democrats and good Republicans who love the country first will be able to find common ground from time to time and recognize we can't keep on spending like we're spending. We can't demand more from tax revenue from people because that kills jobs and hurts working families. We have got to help the middle class in this country. The only way that'll come together is if you have people on both sides of the aisle who listen to a leader who has the experience of leading, and that's what America's looking for and desperately longing for.
So I don't know. I thought he was playing both sides there. On the one hand, he was saying there are going to be Democrats and Republicans who can work together. On the other hand, he seemed to be saying, yeah, he's going to find the good Democrats, those who want the tax cuts.
Exactly. I mean, you really hear there that Mitt Romney is positioning himself as the candidate that is prepared to govern with both his executive experience in Massachusetts and his business experience. But then he says, but you can't compromise on your principles. So how does he define that? He goes on to say, you can't increase taxes because that kills jobs and hurts working families. So if that's your line in the sand, that's not going to be much different than what we have now in Washington.
Another early Romney moment came when he was asked what he would do differently from President Obama in the event of another meltdown, quote unquote, caused by Europe. There was actually a great moment in which he sort of rejected the premise of the question, saying, that's a hypothetical. I don't deal in hypotheticals. The questioner, Juliana Goldman from Bloomberg News, pushed back and said, it's not a hypothetical. More than half the U.S. population says they are afraid of this scenario. U.S. banks have over $700 billion in assets tied up in Europe. And anyway, she got Romney to answer. And here's the last part of that exchange, beginning with the questioner, Juliana Goldman from Bloomberg News.
Would you or would you not be open to another Wall Street bailout?
Well, no one likes the idea of a Wall Street bailout. I certainly don't.
But you said in 2008 that it prevented the collapse of the financial
system. There's no question but that the action that President Bush and that Secretary Paulson took was designed to keep not just a collapse of individual banking institutions, but to keep the entire currency of the country worth something and to keep all the banks from closing and to make sure we didn't all lose our jobs. My experience tells me that we were on the precipice and we could have had a complete meltdown of our entire financial system, wiping out all the savings of the American people. So action had to be taken. Was it perfect? No. Was it well implemented? No, not particularly. Were there some institutions that should not have been bailed out? Absolutely.
And it's so interesting to me because this is the one article of faith in the true believing right and the true believing left. I think we may hear this from our Occupy Wall Street guest who follows you today that, yeah, I'm going to agree with the Tea Party on this part. The bailouts were, you know, a sweetheart deal that ripped off the American people. But there's that, you know, sliver of 5% somewhere in the center who thinks, yeah, the bailouts were really necessary, and that's allegedly the grown-up position, but Romney is embracing that.
Romney's embracement, and that's really where you saw the GOP field kind of split. There weren't many places where they really split on policy, but in the debate, the TARP, whether that was necessary and appropriate, was where there was sort of they split back 50-50, which kind of is in line with the kind of hardline Tea Party candidates, and then sort of the more establishment candidates. Mitt Romney is trying to position himself as the man who is going to make the smart decisions to keep the economy from a collapse, and you heard him there say that.
And there is an argument to be made that almost all the TARP money was paid back, and that letting the banks collapse would have destroyed Main Street even as it destroyed Wall Street, but it's just not a very popular position. There was the other front runner last night, as I mentioned, Herman Cain, and there was a number that we heard from him 36 times last night. You know what it was?
Nine.
He has his plan. Listeners, if you haven't heard it yet, his signature proposal now, the 999 tax plan, 9% corporate business flat tax, 9% personal income flat tax, and a 9% national sales tax. And he mentioned it 12 times last night, so that's 36-9. So here's Cain describing his plan and Michelle Bachmann responding.
Remember, 999 plan throws out the current tax code. And it starts with three simple economic driving principles. Production drives the economy. Risk-taking drives growth. And we need sound money. Measurements must be dependable. Now, what 999 does, it expands the base. When you expand the base, we can arrive at the lowest possible rate, which is 999. The difference between the 999 plan and the other plans that are being proposed is that they pivot off of the existing tax code.
But Congresswoman Bachmann, you're a former IRS lawyer. Do you agree?
I would have to say that the 999 plan isn't a jobs plan. It is a tax plan. And I would say that from my experience being in Congress, but also as a federal tax lawyer, the last thing you would do is give Congress another pipeline of a revenue stream, and this gives Congress a pipeline in a sales tax. A sales tax can also lead to a value-added tax. You're never going to get rid of it. And one thing I would say is when you take the 999 plan and you turn it upside down, I think the devil's in the details.
All right. Oh, Anna, did she really go there?
She did.
She's appealing to somebody on the religious fringes there, right? 666, for people who don't know, in some telling of something, the mark of the devil.
Yes, she went right for that. And I think the whole point about 999 and how prominent that was in the debate last night was just that Herman Cain is now number two, both in polls in New Hampshire and nationally. And he has really, by sort of clever branding and a cute name, he created a whole, I mean, so much of the debate was about the 999 plan. It wasn't about how Romney wants to fix the economy. It wasn't about what President Obama has failed to do. It was about whether 999 would work and whether it's a good idea. And so Herman Cain is really influencing the debate.
And it's got a certain simplicity that when everybody else is talking around this and talking past that, people have to figure out how they feel about a 9% national sales tax, because that's going to be the really new and for a lot of people confusing and off-putting element of it. But if he says 9% national income tax flat, 9% corporate income tax flat, 9% national sales tax flat, and it all sounds kind of low, and he says it's going to be revenue neutral compared to what we have now, well, that's going to be attractive to a lot of people who maybe don't study all the details to find those 666 devils.
Well, what I thought was really interesting is at one point one of the Bloomberg moderators was like, look, we ran the numbers, and your 999 plan would not cover the bills. It's not revenue neutral. It wouldn't bring in the amount of money that we spent last year. And he said, well, I just disagree with that analysis. So,
we'll do a deeper look later in the week at the actual details and the economic arguments for and against the 999 plan. One more clip. Toward the end of the debate, the candidates got a chance to ask each other questions directly, usually a nice little touch. Here, Newt Gingrich directs his question at Romney.
And I was a little surprised, I think it's about page 47 of your plan, that you have a capital gains tax cut for people under $200,000, which is actually lower than the Obama model. Now, as a businessman, you know that you actually lose economic effectiveness if you limit capital gains tax cuts only to people who don't get capital gains. So I'm curious, what was the rationale for setting an even lower base mark than Obama had.
Well, the reason for giving a tax break to middle-income Americans is that middle-income Americans have been the people who've been most hurt by the Obama economy. The reason you're seeing protests, as you indicated, in Wall Street and across the country, is middle-income Americans are having a hard time making ends meet.
Hey, was that Romney being a little sympathetic toward Occupy Wall Street there?
He certainly wasn't using the word mobs or pitting Americans against Americans. I think he's there picking up on the sense that Occupy Wall Street is based around the idea that folks don't feel like anybody has their back in Washington. So, you know, he was taking a very different tack than what you've heard from Eric Cantor on that.
And on the content of Gingrich's critique, he's right, isn't he, that the capital gains tax cut only for people making under $200,000 is more like the Obama plan than the Republican position?
Yes, and the other thing that I thought was interesting about that is that Newt Gingrich read Mitt Romney's 59-point plan, which Mitt Romney proposed several weeks ago. And again, it just showed that Mitt Romney is the candidate that's being picked apart. He's the one that took almost all of the questions when the candidates were able to ask each other things. He is the guy to beat right now, and Mitt Romney looked very comfortable in that position last night.
Yep. Just tell me before you go, how was the Dartmouth crowd? Was it mostly college students? Was it, you know, Dartmouth Review conservatives? Or who was there?
Auditorium, it was definitely, true believers, campaign volunteers, that sort of thing. And out on the Dartmouth Green, though, there were protests who kind of had the look of Occupy Wall Street. People were behind, shouting, were behind the Bloomberg anchors who were hosting the event. So you did have sort of everybody coming out and joining in, and it was a real sort of raucous atmosphere.
Anna Sale reporting on the Republican debate in Hanover, New Hampshire last night for our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Read her stuff there. Anna, thanks a lot. And I want a full report tomorrow on how long it takes AAA to respond.
I know. Look for the hashtag. Let's see if it's help me. Hashtag help me. But we'll
please AAA, come get me. How good in the live free or die state? We will soon have a full report. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we'll give you a chance to call in and ask questions of an Occupy Wall Street leader. He's coming into our studio during the break, and you can start calling right now. As I said before, this is not for those of you who want to call and say, wow, this is the greatest movement since sliced bread. This is not for you to call and say, you stupid socialists, get out of my country. This is for questions. So we know a lot of you are not dug in on one side or the other of Occupy Wall Street and have questions. And our guest, Justin Wiedes, is going to answer those questions. So line up, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Your questions, Justin's answers about Occupy Wall Street coming up next.